Connor Pope is on the line. Connor, what's your favourite sweet from back in the day?
You know, they used to have these apple sours. They were kind of round.
Yes.
They were a bit like gobstoppers. They were round. I used to love them, and they would tear the roof off your mouth. Because you'd be sucking the bejesus out of them. And then your mouth would be in bits, but that wouldn't stop you eating them. You'd go back for more and more and more. And now I'm talking about when I was 10. Obviously, I have far more sense now and I wouldn't be going near them.
Of course, of course. Now, you're writing in the Irish Times today about the new proposals from Heather Humphreys, Minister for Social Protection, about pensions for the 750,000 yeah. private sector workers over the age of 23, under the age of 60. It was announced last week, and you're making sense of it here for all of us.
Yeah, well, I think one of the aims of the Price Watch page in the Irish Times is to try and make complicated stories and stories that people that might turn people off more interesting and more accessible. And I've always taken that as one of the challenges I have. Mm. And you know what? Pensions are really important, and they're really important to all of us, because yet it's something that a lot of people, when they even hear the word pensions, they go, oh God, no, I don't even think about that. But it's a really big issue. And it's, you know, this is like, and I've been writing about pensions for years and years and years, but this is one of those rare good news stories, because the auto enrollment story, while it's not without its flaws, it will see employees getting a pension started. And it's really important when you're in your 20s to start a pension. I mean, I know some of your listeners in their 20s will obviously think they're immortal, and they'll think, sure, what would I ever need a pension for? But it makes such a huge difference when you start a pension, right? Now, for instance, if you start saving for a pension when you're in your 20s, and you want a private pension annually of around €20,000 a year, you'll need to put in around €300 gross a month to get that. So that's €150 after tax.
Okay.
Because you get a tax break. So it'll cost you €150 a month. But so it'll cost you about £150. If you start at 35, then you'll need to put in €500 a month. Mm. So that'll cost you around £250. And if you start at 45, you'll have to put in close to €1,000 a month. So that'll cost you
The good
you
news about this is, of course, you'll have no choice.
Exactly. Now, the way it works is the workers and their employees will both contribute 1.5% of the employee's salary to the pension pot. And then as a kind of a bonus, the government will add an initial €1 for every €3 invested by the worker, right? So, and that money is then invested until the employee reaches retirement age. And over a period of time, those contributions will climb gradually. So it starts off at 1.5%, and then it becomes 3%, and then it becomes 4.5%. And then after 10 years in the scheme, it becomes 6%. And then you're kind of sucking diesel, to use the phrase, because once you're putting 6% of your salary into a pension pot, it will start to make a difference. And the reality is that half of the Irish population are going to rely on the state pension. Now, the state pension is not going to be enough to keep an awful lot of people in this country in the manner to which they've become accustomed. And particularly if we're in a situation where an awful lot of people can't buy houses, so they have to rent houses. And if you're trying to continue renting when you're 65, 70, 75, a pension of €13,000 a year is not going to cover your rent, never mind your living expenses. So that's why it's important that this stuff is tackled, and it's tackled now. But it's not a bad, like I know some people say, oh God, I can't afford to put in a pension, I can't afford to start a pension. And I'm if you talk to pension advisors,
Connor, it doesn't matter what they say, they'll have to. It's mandatory, is it? That's my
But now you can opt out of it.
But what happens then after
and
2 years?
If you opt out of it, you get your chunk of the pension pot back, right? But you don't get the employer's contribution, and you don't get the state contribution. And then after another period of 2 years, you're re-enrolled in it.
And can you opt out again?
You can. I mean,
okay,
you can, but you keep opting out.
Okay, I didn't understand that.
But the big question is that you don't. Right now, and just to give you another, and because the numbers are staggering, right? Now, I spoke to a pension advisor. Her name is Laura Doyle, and she just gave me the figures, right? So based on a salary of €40,000, it costs €100 a month to save €2,000 per annum when you factor in the tax relief. If a person pays in from the age of 25, they'll have a pension pot of €60,000 when they come to their mid 40s, and if they continue paying by the time they hit 70, they'll have a pension pot of €250,000. If you started the pension at 45, by the time you hit 70, you're only going to have €87,000. So that's a huge difference. And that's the kind of difference that will, that's the kind of gap that'll make the difference between somebody, you know, living relatively comfortably into older age. And the reality is, of course, that we're all going to live much older than our parents or our parents' parents. And we do need to be able to look after ourselves because, you know, we see...
There's going to have to be rental subsidies for people once they retire as well.
Listen, we either can buy our houses or there's going to have to be rental subsidies because you can't have a scenario whereby somebody is expected to pay €2,500 a month in rent or €3,500 in rent. And if they're only getting €2,000 in pension funds, that just would not make any sense. Yeah. So there's a lot of different questions still up in the air, but at least this is a starting point.
It's a start.
I think it should be acknowledged for that.
Yes, and it's proactive and it makes people think, which is great. And because there's been an awful lot of talk over the years about pensions and people have probably switched off already. Oh, they're talking about pensions again. But it'll be...
And not when they hear me and you chatting. they're probably turning the volume up on the radio.
Yes, okay, right. This came in to pricewatch.rte.ie. I hope you can give me some advice, Connor. I need to employ a painter to pay my house. I'm worried about a tradesperson getting injured and claiming damages against me. My question is, lots of painters have insurance, but is it the right insurance? What insurance is required so I'm completely covered? I've never thought of this before in my life.
And you're not alone, Ray. And I'm actually really glad we got this mail in because, I know we're talking about pensions and insurance, the two sexiest topics out there, you know. So we're really nailing it today. But you know what? This really highlights an issue that so many people overlook. And I've overlooked it myself. And you overlook it at your peril. Because builders and painters and almost anybody else in the construction and renovation trade right now are as rare as hen's teeth. They're really difficult to find. And then when you find them, they can be pricey. So it's very tempting for people to take shortcuts or to employ friends or friends of friends or random people who call to your door. So a bloke calls to your door and says, can I paint your house? And you get grand. And so they come in and they start painting the house. So the question then is, what happens if something goes wrong? Now, I don't mean if he makes a pig's ear of the paint job. I mean, what happens if you've got somebody in your house and they fall off the ladder while they're painting your ceiling? Who's liable? There's a really good chance it's you who's going to be liable. And of course, the bill for somebody falling off a ladder in your house might run to tens of thousands of euro, or indeed hundreds of thousands of euro in a worst case scenario, depending on the nature of the injuries they have and the litigious nature of the person. So then you think, okay, well, I'll be grand, my house insurance will cover it. So then I went and I looked at like a typical house insurance policy, and it probably won't cover it.
No,
because the terms and conditions of most standard insurance policies offered by the big providers will say, and this is a direct quote from one of them, no cover is provided for independent contractors. So if you've got somebody in your house doing work, they're an independent contractor, and that means that they're not your house insurance will not cover them. It'll cover somebody who comes into your house as a guest. If they fall over your rug and they break their leg, then they're covered. But if you've employed someone to come into your house to do some job like painting, well, then they're not covered. So the first thing everybody has to do, and it's really awkward, one of the early questions you ask any kind of builder, contractor, painter, whatever it is do they have insurance? Right.
This is news to a lot of people, Connor. This is news to an awful lot of people, isn't it?
And then, as if that wasn't awkward enough, you then have to say, can I see proof of your insurance? Because it's not good enough for you to hear a builder or a contractor say, oh yeah, I'm grand, I'm insured. Like, you need to actually see it, right? And then what kind of insurance they need to have? They need employer's liability and public liability. So what are they? Okay, well, employer's liability insurance will cover them in case anyone working for the tradesman in your home is injured.
Okay.
And public liability insurance is in case any damage is caused or somebody else is injured as a result of the work. So imagine you've got a guy roofing your house, putting tiles on your roof, and all of the tiles fall off the roof and hit your next door neighbour. You know, the public liability insurance will cover them in that instance.
Okay.
So that's the types of insurance that you need. And it is an awkward and uncomfortable question to ask, but it's only awkward and uncomfortable.
But if
the tradesperson...
Say if an electrician is a registered electrician or a plumber is registered with the plumbing organisation, does that mean they have to have insurance before they can be registered?
To be registered.
Yes.
Yes. So, you know, and most tradespeople, like this, I'm not talking about the tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of decent, hardworking tradespeople out there. I'm talking about the rogue guy who just randomly rocks up to your house and says, I'll fix it for you.
Yeah.
So all the people who are properly, who've served their apprenticeships and have all their accreditations and have all their cards and have all their insurance, you'll be grand. And in fact, most builders and most tradespeople have that stuff. But you do have to check it just in case. And particularly if you've come at the job from a slightly unusual angle. So if you're getting somebody, as I say, a friend of a friend or a mate who's apparently really good with a paintbrush, you know, you just have to take care of it. Now, it's all worst case scenario stuff, but sure, isn't that how insurance is built? Insurance is built on protecting you
yes.
against the worst case scenario. So, you know, most of the time you'll be grand. And I want to stress this, like most painters will have the insurance. So they're not going to be in the slightest bit embarrassed when you say, do you have your insurance? Because that's, you know, they have it.
Yeah.
You know, it only becomes awkward or embarrassing if they're going, no, I don't. And then you've got to make a really important judgment. Do you employ the person without the insurance because they can do it quick and fast? I would argue that you don't. Or do you wait until somebody who is properly qualified, properly insured, who can do it properly and protect you against those worst case scenarios? And ultimately, it is all about those worst case scenarios.
Right. Can I tell people again, just the price of everything is on Thursday nights?
Yes, every Thursday night at 7 p.m.
The first
episode was last week. Second episode, strangely enough, is next Thursday.
Next Thursday, 7 o'clock with Conor Pope and...
Santos O'Gara. Lovely yes. Santos O'Gara.
Right. If you want Conor to grapple with any of your consumer issues, it's pricewatch@rte.ie, pricewatch@rte.ie. Just before we go, Aine in Mullingar was on, Conor. You were talking about sweets that are no longer available. I remember a bar of chocolate called 2 and 2. There was a dark chocolate on top and a light chocolate on the bottom with caramel filling. That was 1963. I've no memory of it. I wasn't born in it, but thank you for that.
Neither was I, Rain. Neither was I.
What was your favorite? There was one, I can't remember the name of it. It was a sort of a hard one. Anyway, Conor, thanks very much. PriceWatch@RTE.ie.
Right,
that's it from us. Cormac and Sarah are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.